I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and the inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 210. Oy, what a week was last week.
It sure was a week.
I liked it.
I liked it too.
I was quite impressed about how our new platform worked.
Yeah, I thought the platform worked really well. The content from the speakers was really good.
And of course, we're talking about eBay Open.
Yes. We should have, maybe not all of, I can't imagine any of our listeners not going
at
in.
At this point? No.
Yes.
What are they talking about?
I hope they know what we're talking about. And I hope all of our listeners took the time to go listen to the keynotes and listen to some of the sessions. There were some good sessions.
Yeah, I was quite pleased to see the response. Sellers overall were really enjoying it, and I know I was impressed the way it looked this time. Those stages were beautiful and everyone really performed. I was really excited.
The only thing is, I will say this, I agree with one of the sellers.
What's that?
And that was, for the sessions where like the other sellers were doing sessions.
Yes.
I kind of popped in between a couple of them because they were all happening at the same time.
Yes.
And so that was like, somebody said, wait, they're all happening at the same time and there's so much good content. And I thought, true. But that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's a good problem. Plus, you're going to be able to view any content you missed in the way of sessions because they'll all be available on video. And I believe it'll be at YouTube.
I believe on the eBay channel.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought it was a good 3 days.
Well, wait a minute. I want to ask you one more thing.
Uh-oh.
How was LA?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Kind of like, for me, I started the week, Wednesday, Thursday here in San Jose. And then I flew down to Los Angeles because we had an in-person event in Los Angeles. And that's all, like, you know me. Get me in front of sellers and I can engage pretty well. And I learn a lot and it's energizing. It was good. And Ashish was down there. Adam was down there from the eBay business kind of hosting it.
And it went well.
Yes.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yes.
So it was a great 3 days.
It was.
Yeah.
And energizing.
Oh, of course.
So if any of our listeners
yes,
didn't go to Open last week, hopefully you'll check out the recordings when they're up on YouTube. They might be. Normally it takes us a week. I don't think I've seen them yet.
They may be out this week.
Yeah. But if you didn't do it and you didn't go this year, plan to go next year.
Yeah, there's always next year. The sun will come out next year.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
Another Open in the books.
That's right. Yes.
So who's in the hot seat this week?
Well, yeah, I have to break out two hot seats, Brian, because this week, we're going to speak with two gentlemen, not just one. These are two gentlemen who sell mostly high-end men's fashion. You may have seen them last week at eBay Open. They did a session. They're known as the Posh Kings, and they have an amazing backstory to share about how and why they moved from owning and managing several, and I mean several, bricks and mortar stores in Florida to selling exclusively and, I might add, successfully online. But before we meet John and Brad, I have to ask, is there any news of interest to report this week?
There is.
Yeah.
And it's postal.
Uh-oh.
No, not bad news.
Oh, good.
More of a mix. The first news is from our friends at UPS. Effective October 2nd, 2022, UPS will increase some of its rates on the eBay label platform between 1% and 3%. The adjustment will mainly impact heavier ground packages and some air packages. And as always, eBay sellers will continue to get discounted rates when they ship with UPS using eBay labels.
Now I'm curious because I use UPS a lot, but it's usually only for a pound or two, so maybe I won't be impacted. I never use their air service, but how can I see the exact increases and how they're going to apply?
Well, the best way to see them is to visit the eBay shipping calculator. It can help sellers understand how these changes may impact their costs for certain shipments. You'll find the calculator at https://www.ebay.com/SHP/calculator. Think about just do ebay.com/SHP/calculator.
Or just search Google for eBay shipping calculator. It shows right up.
But 1% to 3% isn't too bad.
It's not too
bad. It's manageable.
I think I'll be okay. What's the next news item?
Well, the next news item is from our friends at USPS.
So it is postal.
It is postal. Starting September 26, 2022. Sellers using eBay labels will save even more than they do now on priority mail labels for select weights and zones, with new rates up to $1.02 lower than commercial pricing. So that is good news.
Sounds like competition. Go on.
Yes. And the eBay shipping calculator will help you see the USPS rate discounts. Visit it at https://www.ebay.com/SHP/calculator.
Yeah, I think we've repeated
it's
that.
It's the same address.
I'll put the link in the transcript if you really want to just click on it.
I was going to try and do it one more time and see how fast I could do it.
Okay, knock yourself out.
No, I'm kidding. I won't make our listeners go through that.
So this is so Brian. You present yourself with a challenge and then you back out. Brian.
Exactly.
All right. Enough of the joking. Actually, yes. This is interesting because you can see what's going on with our shipping carriers. USPS raised their rates earlier this year. And UPS says, no rate increases for the time being. Let's all rush to UPS. USPS goes, uh-oh, we better grab some market share. We're going to lower discount rates for eBay sellers. We're going to discount them about $1.02 lower than commercial pricing. Yay. And UPS at the same time says, we're going to raise the rates by 1% to 3%. And you can be sure that this back and forth juggling is going to go on ad infinitum.
Yes.
That's just how business works.
It is.
All right. It's time to bring Brad and John into the studio. Ready to meet them?
Yes. Looking forward to it.
Brian, it's a cavalcade of sellers this week.
It is. It's lovely.
We have so many sellers in the building. But we're here today with two sellers, Brad and John, the Posh Kings, well known on YouTube.
Yes. And Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram.
I just say social.
All the socials.
Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And now they're well known on campus.
We are.
Another check.
A great privilege.
We don't know for what, though. Hopefully it's a positive
thing.
Well,
I was just thinking. I was. So you've been selling online for a long time. I assume even with the name Posh Kings, you do sell on eBay.
We do. We have been selling overall since 2014. Mm-hmm. We owned a chain of clothing stores prior to that.
Okay, you have owned a chain of clothing stores?
Yeah, 9 of them.
Where?
In South Florida. We're in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So we had a chain of men's
luxury clothing stores for 18 years. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud to say for the entire 18 years, we were named best clothing stores in Florida.
Wow.
Every single year. So that was really exciting. We sold men's luxury goods, and we loved it. We enjoyed it, and it was great when it was great. Obviously, 2008 changed a lot of things for a lot of us. So we kind of redirected the stores into more contemporary. And then ultimately, we decided brick and mortar wasn't for us any longer. We sold a few of them, and we closed a few others. Took some time off and decided to jump into the voodoo of selling online, and which was so hocus pocus to us.
I mean, we purchased online, so we were used to that mentality. We shopped on eBay, we bought things online. Selling and actually running a business online was something that was a little bit different. It was almost like witchcraft to us, you know. So I said, "What are we going to do though? Because we don't have the stores anymore, and the money's not going to last forever. So we have to try to shift and pivot and do something." So we tried it.
And did you retain your sources then for your like physical stores as you migrated online?
There were a few. We had connections. And I think people that have owned stores will know this as well. Even though we sold everything direct, we had all the big brands, Armani, Dolce & Gabbana, you name it, we had it. But we also, of course, incorporated more mid-range products that you get a larger margin on. And if you take a $5 shoe and you put it next to a $700 shoe, we can take that $5 shoe and charge $250 for it. So we had lots of product lines early on that we could incorporate that were more affordable products. Obviously, you can't get that type of margin online today, really. So that's very different, especially for not as well-known products. So yeah, we did that early on. We did a lot of suppliers that we could do things like that with.
What was that transition like going from having all these stores and then moving online? Was it all at once? Did you have to close all your stores at once because of 2008?
No, we slowly started to make an adjustment. You know, our first push was people, you know, because back in that day, people were still going to nightclubs and going to happy hour wearing a dress shirt and some $400 jeans and a pair of fabulous shoes. The world started to become more casual. With it becoming more casual, we had to adapt because then it was a guy wanted, instead of a $500 dress shirt, he wanted a great $80 t-shirt.
Right. It made it more value-based.
So we had to become extremely contemporary. We went from, you know, selling the dress shirts and the slacks and dress shoes and all of that jazz, which was our original push when we opened the stores, to becoming denim and t-shirt based and sneakers and things like that. But contemporary fashion sneakers, not necessarily the athletics that we have come to know today. It was always a constant evolution, but the evolution was constantly into cheaper products. Even if they were luxury products, the clients wanted the more casual of the lines, which just naturally, except for today with streetwear being such a heavy, heavy market, and the prices are much higher now in streetwear than they are in dresswear. It was just leading itself slowly to more affordable products.
Well, what happened to all that inventory that you had in the store when you transitioned into online? Did you carry that over?
We did have a lot left over. I have to be honest, we had a lot of our own garments because, you know, at that point, we used to wear, you know, Gucci and Versace suits to work.
We were wearing the products that we were trying to sell.
Oh,
yeah, you had to wear the product.
Each season, we had a new collection of clothes that we would take out of the stores for ourselves. And of course, I just kept getting, you know, bigger along the way. So my sizes ranged from all over the place. I had so much to sell. So I probably had a store full in the end of my own. A lot of it, obviously, you know, as with the last few stores that we sold them with the merchandise. But again, we just had such an abundance of our own. And Louis Vuitton briefcases and all that, we had to show. We sold the life. We had to show the life. You know, you can't expect a client to buy a $500 polo if you're wearing something that costs $20. It just kind of doesn't work.
And they know.
And they do.
Unless
know,
you put a lot of gaudy jewelry on top of it, then that works.
And they'll let you know.
Clients are really smart now. I think that really is something that we have seen, especially in everything we've learned this week from the other sellers, is just how smart clients are now. You can't pull anything over on
consumers.
And not to try to trick them or anything, but they're very smart people. They know how to shop and get the best price.
It's easier to make customers happier when they come informed.
100%.
Yes. And also, it keeps us sellers on our toes. It keeps us competitive, you know, in our own business, not even necessarily with each other, but really keeps us doing the right thing.
You don't have to wear all that clothing anymore. Do you miss it?
I hate pants. I swear to heaven.
He has his own motto about pants because we live in South Florida.
I mean, it's going to kill me to wear pants to dinner tonight, but I will do it because it's respectful. Literally, my new rule is if I will wear them to a funeral or to court.
And I hope you don't have to go to court.
I second that, by
From
the
your
way.
Mouth to God's ears.
Because then we need to have a different kind of conversation after this.
Clothes and shoes are even worse.
You mentioned streetwear. How has the market for men's clothing and apparel overall changed in the last, well, we're talking 14 years since you transitioned or started to transition out of owning physical brick and mortar stores into online? How have you been able to keep up with it? Is it easier to follow trends without having all these stores, or is it harder? The business has changed a lot. Yeah,
It's changed dramatically. It's
180 degrees.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. It's really interesting. We were talking about this over dinner last evening, is how the price differences in men's and women's luxury items.
Really?
Very, very different. And what's interesting, the sellers that we have spoke to, because we kind of put words to what they were thinking, but they weren't really aware of it. Men are really coming out of the box, so to speak. They are wearing more expensive items. They do not care about investing in the garments they wear. They want to present a certain look, which largely used to be thought of as a women's process. Yes. Women were supposedly more conscious of their appearance.
Don't wear the same thing twice.
Correct.
Don't be seen more than once in the same outfit.
And now it's almost like men have taken that over. Young men really want to look their best and are willing to spend pretty much anything they have to do it. Men's luxury apparel and accessories are holding the price far higher. Women now, because there's such an abundance of it on the market, want and can get it much cheaper. They will hold out, you know, and to get the best price.
I wonder if some of the last 2.5 years, too, with COVID and women not having to stay up on that, like for business wear and things like that, play a part of that.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Prior to the pandemic, when it came to women's luxury, it was always about the bags, shoes, and then the garments for, you know, office wear, so to say. When things got shut down and went into lockdown, we weren't selling the high heel anymore. We weren't selling the Manolo Blahnik pump. We were selling UGG slippers all year round. You know, the comfy athleisure pant.
Yeah.
All the office wear was done. And it's like, we didn't know what to do with all of it.
Yeah.
I think with menswear now, what we're seeing is men are also incorporating different aspects. So like everyone knows the sneaker game is on fire right now, right? And the vintage t-shirt, the graphic t-shirt thing is hot. Well, what we're doing is, because we don't do either one of those topics because we're not experienced like that, but we're selling them the Ferragamo belt with the big oversized buckle to go with the Air Jordans and the amazing graphic, you know, vintage t-shirt.
Yeah.
So I think that's how men's luxury is starting. We're starting to see that trend where they're mixing and matching the genres.
And they want all the components it used to be, I think.
They want the glasses. They want the belt. They want the shirt. They want the shoes, the
men
pants.
Would do like one item or something like that if they really wanted to be stylish. Or, you know, a great pair of shoes, what have you.
Yeah, because even with our stores.
Now they're buying the bags. They're buying the everything.
They're accessorizing, finally.
They're over-accessorizing, finally. And that's what we like to see because, look, the men need to shine also. Mm-hmm. You know, women have shined for a long time. Men need to also showcase their artistry,
kind of
so to say.
Related to the lipstick theory, you know, especially, you know, with going back to like 2008, one of the few products, you know, in the Great Recession that skyrocketed was lipstick. Because women couldn't afford to buy
a new Louis bag
or a new purse or new shoes or whatever it was at the time. But they could change their look with a lipstick.
Interesting.
Lipstick so it would change them through the roof.
It would help their mentality and kind of give them something to feel good about during a time when, you know, they didn't know if they could put food on the table that week, so to say.
Whereas a woman, I think, can feel really fabulous and then changing her outfit. If she has a great pair of shoes, but, you know, she may have a, you know, a simple black top from Old Navy or, and it just, you know, there's something about her outfit that makes, you know, it's something striking. Whereas men are really in it to win it, and especially young men. It really is kind of a, I think, a 40 and under mentality. They really want the best of the best.
When I think back how these trends have changed over time, where men celebrate their peacockness, and then it kind of goes away for a while. It seems like what you're talking about is coming back.
You see what I'm wearing today, right?
Yeah, it's very similar.
And you can assume pretty much my age, right?
I wouldn't presume to go there.
My peacock is dead.
I see a hat. I've got to have it. So
there you go.
You know, I visited for the first time in several years, and I don't know why I hadn't, the Robert Graham site. And you are so right.
Yeah.
I mean, their prices have gone up.
And they can get it.
And they can get it. They're selling this stuff. If you go and look, not even at their sale items, you go and look at their items and you say, no, all these sizes are already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And these are $500 t-shirts.
Yep. We sold that brand. And it's like, and then when things slowed down, you could pick up Robert Graham for super discount. And now it's like everything's building back up. It's really, really interesting how to see like the wave. It's like a roller coaster wave.
Like you can go into any of the platforms and you can see it so clearly. Like you can pick up a pair of women's, just as an example, a pair of Givenchy shoes, pre-owned, of course, $25, $30, $35,
$40.
Wow. You probably can't touch a pair of men's Givenchy shoes for under $250, pre-owned.
Pre-owned.
Yeah. To me, it's so interesting that it's 180 degrees from where it was
completely
say, 10
changed.
Years ago or even like 5 years ago.
Very, very different.
Well, if we know anything about human beings and the world and fashion, that's not going to stay the same.
Of course not. No. Of course not.
So what do you foresee happening in the future?
Without giving away business secrets.
Well, we definitely feel the economic climate is still ever-changing for right now. How we kind of balance with that, or we're doing bookends. Meaning, we saw early on that people are looking for affordable goods. Statistically speaking, people only, not only, but most people want to purchase new tags or new items for holiday or birthday or gifts or so forth and so on. So we started seeing an enormous push for holiday at the beginning of summer. We have sold a dramatic amount of sweaters, sweatshirts, new tags, and people admittingly, I mean, buying 20, 30 items at a time from us. And admittingly saying they're buying early for holiday because they don't know what holiday is going to bring in their family.
Especially with what happened the last couple of years with the supply chains.
Exactly. Correct. And, you know, and what happens is, you know, every year we hear the same story, right? Like, I'm going to start shopping early. And everyone's, you get on this regimen, you go, okay, this week I'm going to buy this. But then next thing you know, it's Christmas Eve, you know, or it's like the night before Hanukkah or something like that. I think this year what we're seeing is people are actually going, you know what? I have the money now. I do want to buy as many gifts as that are in my budget. And people are doing it now, slowly.
Well, and they're really anticipating, and look, let's all hope not, but they're anticipating the economy could get a little bit tighter before it gets looser.
It could. Who knows?
You know, so people are being really smart. They're being very, very planful. Along with that, our bookend theory again, is that the complete opposite is that some people are becoming more free with their money. some people have more money now than they did, let's say, a year ago.
Or 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And we can all go over the many reasons as to why, but nevertheless, they do. And they're the ones that are really pushing the luxury men's. And the women still want to shop. They have the money to spend. What I would say is I think the women in general are not as emotional with their shopping. Men are very emotional shoppers right now, hence the $2,000 and $3,000 sneakers we hear about. Whereas women, they want fabulous things, but they're willing to really kind of shop and make sure they get the best deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up a question. If we're talking about sneakers, and I'm assuming that this goes over into other aspects of clothing, and I don't know how much of it is a myth that women are competing with each other when they're, you know, in a social event. Isn't this really the story of men, that they want to have the best sneakers
out there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a competition. It really is. Yeah. It really is.
Because why else would you pay $2,000 for a pair of sneakers?
That were at one point probably $150, brand new in the box from the actual retailer.
Right. If it was just the look, you can get that look somewhere else and be perfectly fashion sense without spending that money.
Even when we had our stores, we were shocked at what the clients would absorb price-wise. We could not find brands expensive enough for what the clients wanted because they wanted to be able to tell their friends. And people can have their judgment, be it right or wrong on this thought, when, you know, theory.
You're meeting their need.
Yep.
Yeah.
And everyone shops for their own reasons.
Yeah.
But like we would bring in a pair, like a new style of jean, you know, diesel jeans, and we'd sell them for $800. They go, how many colors do you have?
Or, you know, D squared and so forth. D-squared,
yeah.
Margiela.
Margiela.
You know, I mean, we were selling $1,600 Margiela jeans and people would come in and buy them in four shades of blue.
And I think that goes back to your
idea. It was shocking. And I was glad they were doing it, trust me, but I couldn't understand it myself.
Yeah. But in like, you know, Griff was saying, I think that was the idea of just saying, you know what? I have the money. I can do it. It's that I'm going to puff my chest and show that I can get this and I'm going to showcase it.
That should be a more prominent thing happening today as COVID has sort of wind down and people are out.
Correct.
It was hard to do this at home on Zoom.
Correct.
Of course.
Check out my jeans on Zoom.
Everything was athleisure.
Yeah.
I mean, we really our business took a beating at some points during COVID, especially in the beginning, because everyone wanted athleisure. So if you didn't already have it, finding it to sell it was very, very difficult because everybody wanted the jammy look.
Right. The jammy look.
I mean, really, it was big.
And as you say that, and it's interesting. Like,
I am so hot in the onesie.
I mean, seriously.
But we would hear
With the feet.
With the feet and the little ears.
We would hear that on Zoom calls. Like, folks would be on a Zoom call, there'd be 20 people in a meeting, and someone would just comment, and they'd say, it's wonderful. I didn't even have to get out of my sweats this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the approach when people started working from home.
There were a lot of uh-oh moments, I'm sure, because there were some with us across the board with people that weren't in those categories. Because how do you scramble now to fill that demand?
Well, did you try to meet that demand?
We tried, but everywhere we were, it was hard to find the product.
The right inventory. We are in South Florida, so finding luxury goods is just
very easy for us.
I mean, we can get them by the truckloads if we want them. But finding quality, everyday athleisure.
What's some examples of brands of athleisure that were...
Is it Lululemon? The Holy Grail.
Stretchy
pants.
Viore. The yoga something. There was a couple.
So I was shocked by this. Somebody said last year, Champion is really hot. And I'm thinking, Champion?
Okay. And it was. They even did a collab with Fendi, I believe it was.
Champion did?
Champion did.
Yeah, I think it was with Fendi.
So a collab. It has a little Fendi logo on. Now the sweatshirt is, you know, $1,800, $2,000, which is, you literally can go into Walmart and buy a Champion sweatshirt right now for $1,199. And that's on the high.
And this, streetwear is so major. If you go on to, especially Givenchy, Balenciaga, all these brands, their sweatshirts are more expensive than, let's say,
a bag.
Suit or a silk blouse.
That is amazing.
It's not even the fabrication anymore. It used to be in luxury. You paid for the fabrication. Silk blouses were always more expensive than, let's say, a cotton blouse. It's not that anymore. It is the actual silhouette and what it is that drives the price.
It's
dramatic. Bags are a little different.
Isn't that fascinating? How the market now perceives things when you're advertising.
Yes.
So like, it used to be about, like John said, if you're looking at a Balenciaga blouse, you're like, oh my God, that has to be the most silky feeling blouse. And now it's like, it's nice, but I love the sweatshirt that has logos all over it.
Exactly.
I would love to have one, but I look like Oscar the Grouch.
It's or like a billboard with all the sign, like a patches all
lost
over you.
All sense of a figure.
You and me both.
I've always felt so out of touch because I've been really brand adverse about advertising brands. I've never had a graphic t-shirt. Until a few years ago, a local Japanese restaurant that serves ramen had the most cutest little bear eating ramen graphic. And I said, I'll wear that.
There you go.
You broke the mold. There it is.
So you would be the Hermes guy.
You'd be the Hermes guy.
They don't do logo.
They don't. You're
they
right.
Don't. They don't. They don't oversaturate their product with logos for a reason.
Is it working for them?
Yeah, I would say pretty good.
The only downfall is that they are heavily copied because it's an H.
It's so easy.
It's such an easy H to copy. Yeah. So you see it everywhere. But they wanted to have the simplicity so that if you knew that someone was carrying a real Hermes, then that's... Mm-hmm.
Like there are brands that we sell actually that are JCPenney house brands that
better quality.
Such excellent quality.
Wow.
That gets sometimes, and God forgive me, JCPenney. You know, sometimes JCPenney has a rap of just being all American, not the best of this or
low
that.
Quality.
The products are actually made better than a lot of luxury brands.
What are some of the JC brands that come to mind?
Worthington.
Oh, I like Worthington, yeah.
Worthington, like, is built to last the war.
Same thing. Liz Claiborne was the other one.
Excellent quality.
Excellent quality. And, you know, Liz Claiborne used to be, if a woman was carrying a Liz Claiborne bag, that was...
Very she-she.
Very she-she, yeah.
Not so much today.
But maybe if you're a value buyer, those are the kinds of products or the lines to actually look at.
We sell tons of
them. Tons. You know, especially after COVID and everything like that, we always based ourselves, even with the luxury brands, we've always based ourselves on volume. We want to keep the product moving. We don't want to marry our merchandise. We've always had that theory and that concept, even with our stores. It's not making money collecting dust on our wall.
Right.
So you have to get rid of it. And if it doesn't sell, then lower your price, move it along. So now we're seeing it's like with these JCPenney brands and like the Macy's brands, people are willing just to buy more. It might be a lower markup, but they're buying more.
And I think also with the possibility again of, you know, who's to say where the economy will lead over the next few months, people are looking for things that are going to last. They're not looking for, well, not all people, of course, because there are always exceptions to every rule. I think right now, you know, you buy the black dress, you're expecting it to last you 6 or 7 wears as opposed to a one-shot deal.
And off it goes to the recycle or to the thrift store.
To the thrift store, where then we have to clean up all the deodorant off of it.
Yes.
Before you resell it, which is literally a nightmare, as we all know.
Or the white wine stains.
Or the white wine stains. Or the spaghetti sauce that fell.
Yes.
You talk about a career that's changed. We used to go to Mercedes Fashion Week, Paris Fashion Week, and now we're getting gum out of the bottom of shoes.
And like trying to ice cube it out of the bag.
Talk about
the
how
bag.
The mighty have Ooh, fallen.
Things know? Have changed. Things have changed.
But we're very successful at doing it. And for that, we're very grateful, to say the least. Thank you, eBay.
The new host of our new pod, Georgia, we were talking after recording recently, and I don't know how the subject came up. And I said, well, I said a line. And it was something like, no doubt you fished it out of some, you know, bargain basement, labor for less.
Yes.
And she said, what do you mean? And I said, tell me you don't know this movie.
Oh, my.
Yes.
She not only didn't know it, she said, doesn't sound like for me.
Oh, my God.
It's the best movie. We've probably watched the Devil Wears Prada. Oh, my God.
Millions?
Not millions. At least 300 times.
I've watched it about 12.
Yeah, I'm always like 10 seconds ahead, already saying the next lines that are coming out. Because there's so many good ones in there. That's one of my favorites.
You have no fashion sense. Well, I don't think...
No, that wasn't a question. No.
And here we go from high fashion to eBay and looking for the connection.
Looking for the connection.
Oh, eBay.
Affordability. Let's do this.
All right. We always ask this, don't we, Brian, of every seller that comes in. You've got a lot of experience both in your niche, on and off eBay. You're selling on eBay now. You're making a living out of it, I assume.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Somebody comes up to you and says, I just heard you on the podcast or I've seen you someplace. I want to get into this market. What do you tell them?
I think they should do it. I think there is so much opportunity and so much ability for growth. And we often say, you know, like a lot of businesses, you know, when I open my we open our first brick and mortar, it takes a lot of money to get those doors open. However, in this amazing business, all you have to do is ask your family members, what do they have that they don't want anymore? What do you have anymore? There are your seed merchandise, your seed money. And you just start it and just keep rolling it over.
And right. like you said, what just you can do it on that? Your phone.
All you need is a phone with a camera, and it's just that easy. And you know, we tell a lot of people because, you know, in the past they've asked us, and they go, you know, how do we do it, and how do you get started? I'm going to do this. I'm thinking like maybe 6 months. I said, just go to your closet. If you don't wear a pair of jeans anymore, take a picture of them and put them up, and just get the ball rolling. There's no reason to wait. You don't, like John said, you don't have to prepare to wait for, you know, lease contracts to go through, credit card machines to set up, merchandise to show up at your door, hire employees, get the insurance on the employees.
It's amazing. And look, and I'll be very honest, we live quite a good life. And it is 100% at this point, except for, you know, investments, you know, which we just leave alone when I get even older than I am now. you know, they're left alone. But, you know, our day-to-day life is paid for by reselling.
We have a much better quality of life now. And we literally just told another person, about an hour ago, this story. When we first started in our relationship, business and in life, we never saw each other. We had 9 stores. We had 100 employees.
Hopping around the stores.
So we'd hop around the stores. And it was an all-day event. And so we never went to family gatherings. We never went on vacation for like the first, I think it was 4 or 5 years that we were together.
Yeah, and our stores were always in tourist area. We would always place them next to nightclubs or really popular bars.
Or restaurants.
So that people would get all hooched up and go shopping. It was the magic medicine.
Let me write this down.
Write that down. And anybody
totally
listening, write that down.
Go shopping.
Have another drink.
Have another cocktail.
And we served cocktails.
And we did serve cocktails in our stores.
We served beer and wine, of course. And it was just a magic medicine. So it did very well for
us. So you didn't see each other.
Never.
And you're still together.
So we went from never seeing each other to we are 24/7. Never apart.
How was that?
It's hard on me. He's a talker and I'm actually very quiet, believe it or not.
Is this the first time you've heard this?
No.
Okay.
It's been
not
a journey for me.
For him. Yeah. Poor John.
For me.
Well, John and Brad, it's been a real pleasure having you on.
For us as well.
Yeah, and thank you for spending some of your lunch hour here with us in the podcast room.
Our pleasure. We can't thank you guys enough for having us.
I mean, it's been such an amazing journey being here.
We're overjoyed. Our hearts are full.
We're gonna want to check in with both of you in a couple months to see how things are going.
Perfect.
See if we're still together.
I'm sure if you've lasted this long, you'll be together.
I drove south of the border for a hot divorce.
Well, if that happens, I'm hoping the economy does well for all of us.
And
a great holiday season to the both of you.
And to you, both of you as well. Thank you so much.
Brad and John sell on eBay under the user ID The Posh Kings. We'll put a link to their store in the summary overview for this episode, and we'll include links to their Instagram.
You got questions?
We got answers. And we only have one question this week. So it's more like you got a question, we got an answer.
We only have one question because all of our listeners were at eBay Open last week.
That could have been it. So why don't we break this up? Because I'm looking at this. It's a long question. You do the first half. I'll do the second.
Okay. Hi, Brian and Griff. I've been casually buying and selling things on eBay off and on since April 2003. Last year, I started reselling secondhand clothing on another platform. But I would really like to make eBay my primary focus. It's been a slow start because I was using the other platform's recommended best practices when I was creating my eBay listings.
Mm.
For example, the other platform's algorithm doesn't like it when you include the size of the item in the title of the listing. I started listening to your podcast a few months ago to see if I could figure out why my listings were performing so poorly. And I've learned a great deal. The proof is in the pudding, or in this case, the analytics. I recently spent some time revising my listings, applying the knowledge I've gained from your podcast and the traffic to my listings. My traffic and page views reflect a huge improvement. I haven't sold anything lately, but I'm hopeful that the next sale is just around the corner now that people are actually clicking through to my listings.
No, that's the first step, right?
It is.
You're going to do that.
Got to get eyeballs.
So our seller, whose name is Amanda, by the way, continues. I have one question. I seem to remember being able to include multiple shipping options per listing in the past. Is that still possible? It seems like I only have the option for selecting one of my shipping policies or creating a new one. I don't see a way to have two different shipping policies offered on the same listing. For items that fit in a flat rate envelope, I'd like to be able to offer calculated and flat rate shipping so the buyer can choose whichever option is less expensive for them. Am I missing something? Thanks for all you do, Amanda. And her seller account is We Frock You. And that's we_frock_u, the letter U. Oof, Amanda. So I was, you know, I got to say that my first response, I didn't read it closely enough, was you got to use shipping policies, but you say you already have one. When you go to create a new policy or edit one, I want you to look really closely at the shipping options. And there'll be, under the first carrier, there's a box that you check that says add another carrier. And you can add up to three carriers. So you can provide different options for your buyers in one listing. Up to three different carriers, different services. But if what you're trying to do is a mix of calculated and flat, that you can't do on a listing. You have to specify at the top what this shipping is going to be. And it's either going to be flat for all one, two, or three options, or calculated for one, two, or three options. But it's a way of providing a benefit to sellers, not just maybe there's one of those options that's going to be cheaper, but there may be one of those options that's faster. So if that's their concern, they may go with an express option, even if it's more expensive.
Makes sense. Is there a reason why we don't allow the mix?
I can't imagine. It would be nice if we did.
Maybe it's something we have to take back to the shipping team.
Yeah. You can also only have one free shipping option. I should check. So I'm going to look at one of my shipping policies. I'm just going to click edit just to make sure I know what I'm talking about here, because I do have memory issues sometimes.
You do not.
You don't know. So you can only have calculated or flat, but you can't have both in one shipping policy. And you can only apply one policy per listing. I've got one here that has three services, but only the first one that you select, you can check it as free or not have it as free. Yeah, you won't be able to offer one service as flat and then one service as calculated. That's not going to work.
I guess one question for Amanda, though, that I would have is, if she's taken the time to be able to do calculated, I mean, she's weighed the package.
Sure.
And she's measured the size of the package. Is there an instance when a flat rate would be less expensive than the calculated?
Well, it's a good question. I can't say. It depends on, again, the carrier and the service. You know,
right.
USPS is the only one that offers flat rate services, and those are pretty clear. So if you're using one of their priority flat rates, you pay for them, you know,
right.
You pass that cost on. But I'll tell you what I do sometimes. So I have a package, and it's going to be a fragrance, let's say, and it's going to be around up to a pound. But I'm not going to use first class package because they don't let you ship fragrance that way. But, you know, through UPS Ground, they're okay with it. But the cost can be, well, anywhere. It's usually around $8 to $9, right? Let's just say that. I can underestimate that package. Or let's say it's a package that's over a pound. It's easier. Maybe I'm going to take some of the onus off of the shipping and eat it myself. The package, when I advertise it, I'll say, it weighs less than a pound, but it actually weighs a pound and 4 ounces. Those are two different charges. And so then they end up paying the lower rate. And when I go to print the label, I put the actual weight in. It increases it by a dollar or two. And then I pay that dollar or two out of my pocket.
You've already factored it into the item price.
I've either factored it into the item price or I know I'm going to pay that out.
It's basically another way to discount.
It's another way to discount an item for shipping without relying on one of the promotion manager tools for shipping discounts. I've been doing that more and more. I'll have a package that I know is going to weigh about a pound and maybe 2 or 3 ounces, which immediately puts it in the 2 pound range. And I'll say it's 1 pound when I list the item.
So the buyer's only paying for 1 pound and you pay the rest.
And the extra usually turns out to be about a dollar or two at most.
You just have to add a step at the end when you're printing in the label to adjust the actual weight.
Right. And for me, it's not hard to do because I'm not selling at a volume. You know, if I sell 5 items in one day, that's a lot. But it's easy for me to go through the bulk label flow and then just make those adjustments all at once before I print out the labels.
Do you do anything to keep track of the weight of the item? Where do you put the actual weight?
Well, you could, I guess, put it somewhere in a custom label field. But what I do is I always second guess myself. So even though I've got a good idea, when it's time to print the label, each box is packed and sealed, and then I mark on the top what it is, you know, in pencil, it's going to be under the label. Every box gets weighed, and then I know the exact weight.
Know.
Yeah. And I'm getting pretty good at it. Very rarely is my weight measurement when I do it that way off. But when I deliberately list it as a lower weight, I do so intentionally.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually not a bad strategy because that makes your item prices competitive.
It does. And it's just one more way for me to have fun.
Yes.
It's the most important thing in life is to have fun. Yeah. And that's why we do this podcast, because
it's fun.
We hope it's informative, but you've told me off the mic that this is the most funnest of all the days of the week for
you. It is. I enjoy it.
Good.
Because
all right.
Because we get to talk to sellers.
We do.
We get questions from our seller community.
That we do.
I always learn something from our seller community questions, so I hope they keep asking them and sending them up. Sometimes we're actually even able to take their questions and stuff and push it to our product teams or our policy teams, and that feels like, hey, not only are we disseminating information, but we're also helping sellers in other ways. Not that we don't get to actually, no one would want me coding. But it's nice to be able to feel like we can be a voice for our sellers as well. So I enjoy this day. And then it's always enjoyable talking to you.
Oh, it's enjoyable talking to you. I would add, doing this podcast every week does give me the chance to kind of indulge, self-indulge that need for me to be wise ass sarcasm. So
there's never any sarcasm in the show.
Oh, no, never. never, ever, ever. Well, Huntley.
Okay, Brinkley.
Well, like I said,
we've dated ourselves.
Yeah, but we had fun doing it.
If you want to have fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. Call at any time of the day. Just leave your question or comment on the voice line. And if we're interested, we may actually call you back and ask you to be on the show. So we're going to start doing that more often. No one's leaving any messages, so obviously it's the wrong approach. So we'll have you on the show. How's that?
Sounds good.
Yes.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us, as Amanda did, at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
It's time for your three-point podcast checklist. We do this every week. Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements. For up-to-date seller news every day.
If you missed a session last week at eBay Open, remember that you can always review all the sessions on our YouTube channel. Go to www.ebay.com/open to find the link.
And number three, if you need to review anything in this episode, it's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard, and to find the links we referenced during the episode. On our next episode, we'll meet Mark Yeager from TaxAct. You know TaxAct. Mark and his team are going to be regulars on our guest schedule to share different aspects of tax and business advice we can't share otherwise because we're eBay employees. And next week, Mark will go over the importance of adopting the right business structure for your business on eBay.
And hopefully they'll share the link to the Tax Act page that was put up. They put out some really good information already for our sellers.
Of course they're going to share that, Brian.
I'm just making sure. It's a teaser.
I know. Such fun.
We'd like to again thank our guests this week, John and Brad of the Posh Kings.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.